with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
By the end of today, all 32 NFL teams will have reported to training camp. The road to the Super Bowl starts now. Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Michael, when you think of report day and these first few days of training camp getting underway, like, what does this time of year signify for you as a former GM?
The marathon begins, right? And it's about the pacing yourself. But what I love about it, I was just talking about this on McAfee, is the fact that we can get into a routine, that you kind of have a routine and, you know, the unpredictability of the offseason is eliminated. The offseason is hard because, you know, you be at office and all of a sudden a contract comes in or something changes and now, you know, some plans you made are no longer available to fulfill themselves. Whereas in the season with a routine, you know you're going to be off at this point. You know this is happening. And it's pretty much we just work towards the season. Plus, it gives you an opportunity to look at something that you've worked on to build to see if what you thought was the problem was the problem. What you thought could solve the problem, solved the problem. Mm.
And we're going to dive into a lot of what some of those potential problems might be for a handful of teams coming up in just a little bit on the show. We're going to continue going through your big questions for teams around the NFC. Also, this hour and 30 minutes, VSiN's own Adam Burke is going to join us. The NFL betting guide is out now here at VSiN. The college football betting guide will be here before you know it. First games getting underway in just over a month. We'll also have NFL betting analyst Connor Allen join the show. And we'll have like a full GM corner between you and Randy Mueller getting together. Maybe we can get a few training camp memories from the both of you as well. But as for the news of the day, Michael, we've got holdouts, we've got hold-ins, we've got players showing up, people on podiums. So let's jump right in. 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk, we learned yesterday, did report to training camp despite not having the contract he wanted, despite requesting a trade from the team last week. And general manager John Lynch spoke to reporters yesterday addressing the state of Ayuk's contract.
You know, we started this really early. We made it a priority to try to get done. We've had excellent communication throughout. You know, really don't want to characterize it. We haven't been able to, and that's a shame. But, you know, we're Brandon's a big part of our team, and we expect that he will be this year.
John, last year you gave us an absolute that Bosa would not be traded. Would you make that same statement about Brandon?
Well, Kyle and I always, you know, we kind of, I did say that with Bosa and I felt that way, but you know, I think again, no absolutes there. We fully intend on Brandon being a Niner moving forward. We're always open to listen to things. But like I said, we expect Brandon to be an integral part of our team like he has been and, excited about that.
So, Michael, the plan and intent is to keep Brandon Ayuk a 49er, as we have discussed. But what did you think of the follow-up and John Lynch keeping the door open?
I think what he was saying there, if you want to go GM translator, I think what he was saying there was, if someone wants to be stupid and offer us a lot for him, we'll take it. Whereas there's no way he was going to take anything for both. He can't. Dominant pass rushers who can win defensive player of the year are rare. And so they're separate. And so, but what he's saying is if somebody wants to be stupid and pay us ridiculous amounts for Brandon, we'll be more than willing to listen, which I think is what he has to do. Look, I think the difference is Ayuk's a really good player, but he's not a rare player. Bosa's a rare player. There lies the difference.
When it comes to the wide receiver situation as a whole, do you still stand by the thought process that, okay, Brandon Ayuk is going to play on the team this year, as we all expect, and then at the end of this coming season, the team's going to have to be forced to pick between he and Deebo Samuel, and they're most likely to pick Ayuk? Do you still stand by that thought process?
Yeah, I do. Because, look, they have so many. Now, a lot of it's going to depend on Pearsall, too, who they drafted in the first round, right? It's going to depend on what his growth is, how he handles his development. Cowling, we know from his career at the University of Arizona and at UTEP, he's going to be more of an inside receiver, and he's going to be able to contribute on four downs, be a punt returner, take Ray McLeod's job away. So I think there lies the void. If Pearsall's an outside receiver, I think certainly they could look to do that. They have Jennings, who's a little bit of both. But what they have is too many inside receivers. And look, as great as Debo is, and Debo's a talented football player, make no mistake about it, but Debo's really a running back playing wide receiver, not a wide receiver that's great with the playing running back. He is a running back, and they could line him up in the backfield, and you wouldn't miss a beat. Now, could he stay healthy? I don't know. But he, you have to get the ball in his hands to make him effective. He's not going to win on routes on the outside. He's not a polished route runner. He's not a polished third down runner. That's where Ayuk becomes so valuable.
Yeah. You mentioned Ricky Pearsall, the 49ers first round pick from Florida. He, by the way, suffered a hamstring injury. He's on the PUP list, at least to start here as training camp gets underway. Ayuk, 1,342 yards last year, seventh in the NFL, 17.9 yards per reception, second in the league. So maybe I was just looking through the most receiving yards in the league prop board. 22-1 to have the most receiving yards might be a little bit long. Justin Jefferson, Michael, of course, we know reset the market with what he is being paid. And with that, while Ayuk is there and available, another star wide receiver is not. CeeDee Lamb for the Dallas Cowboys did not make the trip to California where things sit right now as the rest of the team did. He also skipped the mandatory minicamp in June. So he's already got fines of $100,000 in the pocket. And now it's going to be $50,000 per day that he doesn't show up to practice. What do you make of the latest in Dallas?
I don't know how smart this is on him. And obviously, you know, does he just feel like Jerry's going to just forgive the fines? I can't answer that. To me, look, there's got to be a reason why this deal's getting done. And my instincts tell me, knowing the league, and I'd be interested to see what Randy Mueller thinks about this, is it's really how do you value Justin Jefferson's deal? The media values it at $35 million. People in the league think it's $32 million, think it's in line with A.J. Brown. But I think there lies the rub. And I think, to me, this deal shouldn't be hard to do based on the Jefferson deal. Is he as good as Jefferson? No. Could he? Should he have a deal similar to him? Yes. You know, there's so many receiver deals. It shouldn't be a hard deal to do unless you're interpreting the deal a different way. And for him to throw away $100,000 on the minicamp and then throw away more, look, this is not going to be good, and I think it's going to affect their team this year. This is what worries you so much about their team. It's going to affect them.
And we have heard so many players come out and say that after going through a holdout that it impacted them on the field moving forward. So I agree that is significant. I'm still just trying to figure out what the heck Jerry Jones meant all those months ago when he said they were going all in. Because at first we thought, okay, it just means maybe you're not going all in and the team and the players that you're going to bring in free agency, but you're going all in on these big contracts that you're going to do. You're going to get those done. Yet we're sitting here with CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, and Dak Prescott all without anything done.
But I think he meant all in on getting them done. But I mean, he still hasn't gotten them done, that which is shocking, right? You know, it's like it's not that they don't spend money. And again, you know, they've been sitting here. Think about this, though, Stormy. You know, usually most teams that are trying to improve their team, they go to a player they know is going to be part of their team, like Dak Prescott, who's got a huge cap number. They lower his cap number in terms of guarantee his paragraph five. He's going to be on the team. It's just a clerical issue. And all of a sudden you pick up enormous amounts of cap room, and the Cowboys are not doing it. That's why I don't think they're moving on from Dak, but I'm wondering why they don't just go ahead and try to get some cap room relief from Dak by just guaranteeing $10 million of his salary.
There's a lot of things they could do, but it looks like, I mean, and what, by all accounts, if you're Dak, I don't blame you for not picking up the phone or doing anything, because if you hit the market next year, you could get a serious payday. And with that, so he's trying to figure out when and how much he's going to get paid. Tua Tagovailoa, another one of those guys, although the team in a similar situation, but for different reasons, isn't wanting to pay him what he's asking for. Cameron Wolf of NFL Network said that he will participate similar to OTAs during training camp. He did individual drills in 7-on-7, but not any 11-on-11. And head coach Mike McDaniel said it's important to acknowledge Tua's in the process of contract negotiations, using terms like very fluid and day to day to describe how they'll use him during training camp.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a harder one to do. I think, to me, the Jordan Love deal can get done quickly because the Packers, like the Giants, love Jordan Love. The Giants love Daniel Jones. That was going to get done. The Packers are going to get this done. There's a little bit of a rub here on Tua because they know Tua has limitations. Mm-hmm. They also are worried about Tua, you know, in concussion protocol. So how much of the guarantee are you willing to do? And yeah, it's fluid, but at some point, you know, you're going to want to have him back on the field doing, like, I don't understand it. The fact is he's not going to get hit. Take 7-on-7 or you take team, nobody gets near the quarterback. But I think to me, this, I could see this one lingering. Jeff Darlington of NFL Network reported, or ESPN reported, that it could linger too. I think there's problems here because they like Tua. They're just not willing to go all in on Tua like the Packers are with Love.
Yeah, and you referenced the concussions, only one full healthy season for him this past year. And yes, he did lead the league in passing, but how much was he padding those stats against bad teams? Most notably, you think about the 70-point game yeah. against the Broncos. Against teams over 500, they're 1-6, averaging 16 points per game. And Tua's performance in those games was objectively bad. Like, he was a big part of why they weren't having success on that level. Michael, if you surveyed 30 NFL GMs around the league and you said, pick between Tua or Jordan Love right now, who would you pick? Like, how many of them are saying Jordan Love? If you did the same thing with Purdy and Tua, how many of them are picking Purdy, right? Like, what do you think?
Well, that's why I said, I mean, I don't, Purdy's going to end up breaking the bank like you can't believe. Like, if Love gets this deal, what's Purdy going to get? I can't imagine Kyle or John are sitting there saying, oh my gosh, how do you defend that? I agree with you. Look, Jordan Love, everybody's worried about Tua's longevity, his taking the hits and what he does. I mean, you know, look, he has a hard time in bad weather. That's fact.
Hard time in bad weather against good teams. I'm not sure that's what I would want to sign up for necessarily if I was a team owner or GM. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we return, Michael's got questions for these NFC teams entering camp. Plus, a new edition of Hard Knocks came out last night. Why don't we start with Big Blue?
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our great betting tools and content available at VSiN.com. Each and every day, all of our show hosts, analysts, and experts have best bets easily accessible on the website, updated betting splits, and exclusive articles, including a regular column from our own Michael Lombardi on the website right now. The biggest question facing each and every NFC team. All teams have questions that must be answered in the coming weeks. We'll do that for the NFC this week, the AFC next week. Head to vsin.com today. And let's get into some of these questions that you have, Michael, starting with the New York Giants. Before I get your immediate question, I got to have a question for you about last night's Hard Knocks episode as we continue to move forward. A lot of interesting stuff has come through in this series, hasn't it? What were some of your big takeaways from last night?
Well, I just think there continues to be an absence of leadership. Like, I think to me, I wonder, somebody in the league texted me today and said, the Giants, are they just not aware about what's going on around the league? It doesn't seem like they're wired, right? It didn't seem like they had a good sense of who was going to take who in the draft. And, you know, and I think he's asking everybody for their opinion when I want somebody to come in and say, this is what we're going to do. For all the conversation about protecting Daniel Jones, you know, signing Runyon and Illuminor solved all those problems, right? Like the whole notion that they were, oh, no, we weren't trading up to get a quarterback. We were trading up to get Alt. Remember that came out after the draft? Have you heard the name Alt mentioned at all in those draft discussions when he had John Mara and Bob Tisch in the room?
They just showed the one clip of being at Notre Dame, of the pro day, right? And they're like, oh, he's going to go high, right? That was the only mention of Joe Alt we heard.
That's it. I mean, so like, look, don't lie to us. Just it's fine. You love Daniel Jones. I mean, you see the pain in John Mara's face when they even think about trying to trade up to. I mean, he loves Daniel Jones. It's a son-father love affair. It really is.
Ay, caramba. I did think it was interesting, though, like hearing some of the conversations with Dable in the room and asking, well, would you want to trade up for Jaden Daniels? Yes. Would you want to trade up for Drake May? Yes. Like, he was very open to it. But as a team, they've invested in Daniel Jones. I don't know what you're going to do. They do seem, though, very happy to have landed Malik Nabers. And I don't know if they are shaping the episode specifically around that, because that's who ultimately they drafted. That would make a lot of sense since they have a say in how this thing is going to look. But in all the clips that we've seen, they seem pretty hype and excited that that's who they ended up getting at 6.
Yeah, I mean, look, and you could just see by his tape, I mean, the way he runs routes, his power, his explosiveness. I mean, Neighbors is really a good player. And I'm not suggesting he's not. I just think, to me, look, the number one objective of the team going into the offseason was, can they fix the quarterback position? Because let's put things in perspective. If you just go back to even when they won 9 games, when Daniel Jones played his best, right? Mm-hmm. He still struggled. He still was bad on third down. He still wasn't very able to make decisions quickly and process. And now you take out Saquon from the offense. This is fascinating. They take Saquon out, right? Saquon gained 482 yards after contact last year. He gained 480 before contact. So before and after, he's the same back. Singletary gained 348 after contact and 550 with no contact. So you're giving up power in the run game here. Where are you making that up from?
Yeah.
Where are you getting that from? And that puts more pressure on Daniel Jones.
And that's why, as you wrote in your article, the big question is, what is this offense going to look like without Saquon Barkley? And because you did mention the offensive linemen, they brought in John Runyon and Jermaine Illuminor. Illuminor apparently already injured the first day of practice. He was down for a few minutes, did end up getting up, walking around on his own, but not a great start if that's a group that you're trying to finally be able to keep your quarterback upright.
Right, and Evan Neal's on PUP. He's not even healthy to play. I mean, look, Illuminor is a average to below average right tackle. That's what he is. Ask the Raiders. They had him. He can play right and left tackle. He's actually a little bit better at left tackle, but he can play right tackle effectively. It's not great. It's above the line. It's good enough. But now you're going to play him at guard, which he's really not a guard, and you're counting on Evan Neal to be your right tackle. So now you could potentially have two areas of weak points. You know, I thought when they signed Illuminor, they're going to play him at right tackle. I'm not saying it's perfect, but at least. But then this, we got to protect Daniel Jones. They don't even draft anybody. Mm. They didn't even draft anybody after that.
Well, Michael, a lot of the reasons you laid out and what you said about Daniel Jones are a big reason why I will continue to repeat. One of my favorite props this season is Daniel Jones under 6.5 passing touchdowns. He's only gone over 15 once in his career to this point. And my favorite stat of all with Daniel Jones, it's not the fact that he had 2 touchdowns and 6 interceptions the first handful of games last year before getting injured. It's the fact that he hasn't thrown more than 2 touchdowns in a game since December of 2019. That's insane. It sounds wrong. Go double check me. It's right. It's crazy. Right. Let's move forward, though. Let's talk about another team you have a question mark for in the Los Angeles Rams. By the way, we saw yesterday Matthew Stafford has decided to report to training camp as he gets a restructured deal done in L.A. But what's the big question about the Rams?
Well, I think there's no question that, you know, when you go through the team, losing a Hall of Fame player like Aaron Donald is going to be hard to do. Now, Young and Turner, they had 17 sacks and 35 quarterback hits between the two of them. Pretty impressive, right? Yeah. For two rookies, that's pretty damn good. Yeah. But you know who was getting the double team every play, right? So now he's not getting there. He's not going to get double team. Can you, in fact, have that, right? And I think, to me, the Rams had an inability to turn the ball over last year. They're 30th in takeaways per game. So that's going to be interesting to look see. We said this earlier. Elliot posed the question, who was going to get done first, Stafford? I think we put it out for a poll question to the fans on Twitter. Who would be the first quarterback to get done? Somebody actually wrote in Stafford, which they were right. Stafford was always going to get done because he needed to get done. He wasn't coming to camp. They know they needed him, and they knew they needed to adjust his contract.
And hopefully that offensive front can just protect him, because at 36 years old, we saw last year when he was a little bit dinged up and when the line was a little bit dinged up, the problems that that caused. But I like this Rams team a lot this year, and I hope that defensively they can stand up in Aaron Donald's absence. Obviously, to your point, you can't replace a Hall of Famer like that, but they do have some young up-and-coming talent. And offensively, we know how many weapons they have. They're even money now to make the playoffs. They were around plus 120, so people are betting them and thinking that they could have success this season. Yeah. We talked about the Dallas Cowboys. Well, go ahead.
No, I think it's a good play. I think you're risking the durability of the team, which is always a concern.
We talked about the Dallas Cowboys earlier when it, as it pertains to a lot of the contract situations they have this year, but it is a team that's had a lot of regular season success the last handful of years, three straight 12-win seasons, still trying to have something to show for it in the playoffs, haven't gotten there yet. When you look at Dallas, what question do you really need to see answered with this group in training camp?
Well, I mean, who's going to be their running back? I mean, they've got so much ability to play from in front. You got to worry about that. And so when you play from in front, this allows you to take away one of the weapons another team has, which is their run game. Because when you're behind, you can't hand the ball off. You've got to throw it. You got to get back into the game. Think about this, Stormy. In four of the six losses of the Cowboys they had, they allowed 266, 222, 170, 143. In those games, four of the six, they just got the ball ran down their throats. Mm. Detroit gained 125 and should have beaten them. So, like, for me, because they score so rapidly with their offense, if that offense doesn't set the tone for the defense, we could see a regression here. And I think that's what we're going to see.
This Dallas Cowboys team does have a win total set at 10.5 to the second shortest shot in the NFC East. The Eagles, the favorite. The Cowboys sitting there at plus 150, 7-1 to win the NFC, a place they haven't even been in around a quarter century. Let's go to the Green Bay Packers. We talked a lot about Jordan Love and the status of his contract, as well as he is holding in. He's going to be around, but still waiting to get a contract done for him headed into this season. The defense, though, is where most people have questions. What are you looking at with Green Bay?
Well, I think, to me, Green Bay's got to stop the run. In four games, they gave up over 200 yards rushing. Atlanta, Detroit, Giants, and the Steelers. Three of them were on the road. Three of them, can they improve their run defense? They were 23rd in yards allowed, 23rd in yards per attempt, 26 in rushing attempts allowed per game. Meaning teams wanted to run the football on them. So for me, that's what it starts with. That's Jeff Haley's challenge, is how are we going to fit the runs? How are we going to handle the run fits? Who's got gap responsibility? Where's the gap integrity going? I think all that is really important. And if they could do that, they'll get the ball back. Because what happens when other teams run the ball on you so much, you don't have the ball. The clock's running. You get less possessions. You get less opportunities to do what? Score.
And we'll know right away whether or not that's going to be taking a step forward or not. I'm very interested to see what Jeff Hafley is going to bring to this unit. We got to hit the break here, but so much more still to come on the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Wednesday. We're going to get into a little bit later some NFL props. I'm excited to talk to Connor Allen at the end of this hour, Michael, because he has gone through in detail over 892 season-long NFL props with different trends that could be our friend or foe. So that'll be at the end of the hour. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Lombardi Line, all NFL all the time. And with that, remember, the VSiN NFL betting guide is out now. And by the way, our new college football betting guide is dropping next Thursday, August 1st. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the football season. Our experts have profiles of each and every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of the month and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for our early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires July 31st, so don't wait. Head to vsin.com/subscribe today to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. I have written up a couple of my picks for the guide. We're going to have next week on the show, VSiN's own Adam Burke, dive into everything that you can expect to get from the College Football Betting Guide. We got ACC and Big Ten Media Days going on right now. So in addition to training camps being underway in the NFL, college football is upon us as well, Michael. But let's get back to the NFL and some of your big questions around the NFC side of things. Let's hit on the Vikings here, because this is a very interesting team. Obviously, in the draft, they go ahead and take J.J. McCarthy, who is, you know, a very exciting up-and-coming player. But they also brought in Sam Darnold on a one-year, $10 million contract first. And we all anticipate him being the bridge quarterback as McCarthy gets a little time to sit and learn. What's your big question about the Vikings and Sam Darnold?
Well, I think when you break, obviously it all comes down to can Darnold protect the ball, right? I think that's really what it comes down to. You know, we've always wondered about his ability to, you know, throw it far, throw it hard, all that. But over his career, his interception ratio has always been too damn high. Mm-hmm. Last 2 years, though, it went down. Typically, it's at 3.1. It fell to 2.15. Now, last year, the Vikings finished 30th in turnover margin per game. The year before, they were very good. They were the best team in the league in not turning the ball over. So the difference between why they won all those close games and why they lost all those close games lay strictly right into their inability to protect the football. And so they're given two away last year, two years ago, they're given two turnovers away. The other thing I think about Minnesota that's really important is Minnesota with Alex Mathison, after, you know, they made the change at running back where they let Cooks go, right? They thought, oh, okay, Mathison can come in and play really well. Well, they were 29th in the league last year in rushing attempts. They were 30th in getting offense from their rushing game. They had no run game. The longest run last year was 31 yards. They only had 7 touchdowns rushing, Stormy. Yeah. And so when you put that all together, you say, wait a minute. Well, you know, that's a big burden on a quarterback, especially a Nick Mullen quarterback or a backup, any backup quarterback. It's really challenging to go in there at Josh Dobbs. You can't hand the ball off and gain any yards or make a big play. I think that was one of the reasons why they turned the ball over so much. That will change. I think with adding Aaron Jones, they will run the ball.
Yeah, and it's interesting looking at the odds for this team. I mean, a lot of changes, obviously, but win total just 6.5 seems a little bit odd. I understand why, but just on the surface, looking at it and thinking about what this team has done the last couple of years did feel low. But when it comes to Sam Darnold, the thing that I'm trying to figure out, Michael, a lot of people believe in him coming out of working under Kyle Shanahan, but we saw very little of him on the field. So like my big question is just like, what version of Sam Darnold are we going to get when he is out there, and how long is he actually going to be out there with JJ McCarthy sitting there learning and getting the opportunity to get out there on the field? Like, what week will we see JJ McCarthy? Because I think a lot of people do anticipate we'll see him here in this rookie season. How about the New Orleans Saints? Well, you go ahead. If you have more, I'd be very interested.
Well, no,
to know.
I think you answered your own question. I think as soon as the ball gets turned over, okay, as soon as we see that ball get turned over, we're going to see another quarterback come in. I don't think Kevin O'Connell's going to go through a year where he's watching him give himself games away.
And if there is a guy that takes care of the football, we saw at Michigan, J.J. McCarthy certainly does do that. Let's go to the Saints, though. Another team with quarterback questions, fair to say.
Yeah, no question. I mean, really, the Saints come down to, you know, what car are we going to see? The one that was 4-1 with 14 touchdowns and 2 interceptions and a very high completion percentage the last 5 games of the year? Or are we going to see the one at the beginning of the year with 2 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions, and not scoring more than 20 points in a game? In the first 4 games of the year, when Carr was being bad, he averaged 15.5 points. In the last 4, he averaged 28. What car are we getting? And when you really peel back, you know, and I was digging deeper on the Saints today, you know, when you go back through them, they're kind of a fascinating team, because the other guy that I think, you know, Kamara came to camp, but you really study Kamara, you got to worry about, we have a perception of him, but the numbers don't back up that perception any longer. Last year, 2 years ago, he averaged 8.6 yards per reception. He had a long of 54 yards. Last year, he averaged 6.2 per reception. His longest run last year was only 17 yards, Stormy.
That's wild.
And you could say, well, he doesn't score touchdowns. But no, he's never scored a lot of touchdowns. He only has 11 touchdowns over the last 3 years, because what happens is Tyson Hill in the game to run the ball in the red zone. So Yeah, Taysom Hill, I'm sorry. So the reason he doesn't score touchdowns is that, but his big playability is not the same guy. Is that injury, or can he regain himself? And I think he's been trending downward the last 2 years, which is why the Saints haven't touched his cap number.
Yeah, a lot of things that Saints offense needs to figure out. And to what you said about Derek Carr, too, we joked earlier about Tua Tagovailoa padding his stats against, like, bad teams, right? But Derek Carr pads his stats in garbage time. It's terrible. It's dink and dunk all throughout the game. And then fourth quarter, game's out of control, and he's throwing it up and just racks up added yards. It's so interesting. In the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons are an odds-on favorite, minus 120, followed by the Bucks, plus 320, and the New Orleans Saints, plus 340 there. Okay, this next team I'm going to ask you about, Michael, you got to choose your words wisely because you know all of Philadelphia is listening. What's your training camp question about the Eagles?
Well, I think it's a fair one, right? Last year, Philly ranked 30th in the NFL in points allowed in the fourth quarter. And that's not because they were playing from in front, right? I think it's because they were tired. They were out of gas. And their conditioning was horrendous. They've changed their practice routine this year completely. They see it. This question that I have about Philly is the same question they have inside their building. You know, they were 24th in sack percentage. Think about this, Stormy. They were 24th in sack percentage last year. In 2022, they were first. They dropped to 24th. They averaged 6.39 sacks per pass attempt in last year. In the year they went to the Super Bowl, it was 11.05. That's a tremendous decline in sack percentage, and a lot of it is reflective of of being out of shape and not in condition.
That said, how impressed have you been with, at least on paper, the moves that they've made this offseason to improve not only on that side of the ball, but offensively as well? It seems like they're a team that did a really good job this offseason.
Yeah, I think they addressed all their needs. Bryce Huff's a really good player. He's better than Haason Reddick. I asked somebody today in the league, I said, how did the Jets not franchise Huff and make the Eagles pay for him? I mean, to me, it's one of the biggest problems. You could just see watching Hard Knocks. You know, when I watch Hard Knocks, I go back to what Walsh told me in 84. We're only competing against eight teams. There's some teams that just don't know how to win. And the Jets happen to be one of them. I mean, the whole Jets thing with Aaron Rodgers, you know, now with this Haason Reddick stuff. And let's be honest. I mean, you know, they give away Bryce Huff, who's one of their best rushers. They give away Myers Franklin, too, who's one of their better players. Can they duplicate that?
Michael, have you talked to anybody that's been able to give you some sort of reason behind why the Jets traded for Haason Reddick without having a deal in place prior to?
They say they did have a deal in place, but it wasn't signed. They took his word for it, which is never you do. Storm, you never do this. You never do that. You either get a deal, you either button it up, or you don't make the trade.
Like, I can't imagine being in a GM's shoes and saying, oh yeah, a handshake deal works for me. Like, that doesn't seem like that's how things work when you're agreeing to take on a player.
Yeah, I don't understand it either, but that's the Jets. I mean, you basically bought Howie Roseman's problem, and he's sitting back laughing, and he's got your best pass rusher.
Oh, gosh. We'll see. As of right now, Haason Reddick holding out until or unless he gets that contract done. And it's going to be expensive for him to do that. As we mentioned earlier today with the CeeDee Lamb holdout, $50,000 a day in the collective bargaining agreement every day of training camp that you are not out there on the field with your teammates. Okay, I mentioned it a little bit earlier. Connor Allen, NFL betting analyst, is going to join the show. He went through 892 different season-long NFL props to give you at home a little analysis and understanding of what types of props are more successful. We will hit on that and a whole lot more as we round out hour one of the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
July's ending with a bang, UFC 304 has not just one, but two titles on the line. Get your own crown by jumping in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, that's code V-S-I-N, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi line. All 32 teams underway, having reported to training camps. We are getting ready for the season, ladies and gentlemen, and to help us continue to do so, Connor Allen joins us on the Progressive Guest Line, NFL betting analyst, 4 for 4 football. And Connor, let's jump right in, because as I teased before the break, you posted on X, you went through 892 different season-long NFL props and wrote up a handful of notable winning trends. Let's start with one that you think is most impactful or most actionable for bettors to be aware of.
Yeah, I think the biggest one is that if you bet the under just in general on season-long player prop market, you're looking at 2021 is going to hit 63% of the time, 2022 hits 60% of the time, and then last year, 60.5%. Books are getting a little bit sharper. They're moving lines a little bit lower and lower, but that doesn't really seem to matter because they're offering more and more props. So at the end of the day here, if you're looking to take a season-long prop, I would always start with the under and then work your way outside of that, because there's just so many more outs for unders. A player can get injured. Something can happen with an offensive line, offensive coordinator. They can be traded. There's so many more outs for an under or a season not to go right. Whereas if a season were to go right, like, it needs basically everything to happen. So I think unders are a great place to start for season long prop.
How about the team season long props? You're not buying into the Raider culture, the Raider way. You're not buying into any of that with the under 6.5. I don't disagree with you, but you're not buying it.
Yeah, I think that Antonio Pierce did a good job last year in some facets, but I think it was a little bit of a flash in the pan, especially if you look at what they have going on this year. They have a quarterback competition between Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. Their offensive line badly needed help, and they didn't really address it enough. Their offensive coordinator is Luke Getsy, who I think was one of the worst offensive coordinators in the league last year with Justin Fields, and somehow I really don't even think deserved a job and has got a job with the Raiders. And their defense has plenty of questions too. They have depth issues in the secondary, and they have some good players. Now, you know, Davante Adams, Brock Bowers, they have some star power, but I'm just really worried about all the ancillary pieces coming together here. So I think that they're under 6.5, and I even bet them to be the worst team in the league. It's like 12-1, 15-1, because I think the floor here is really low. There's already rumors of Davante Adams being traded. Now, I don't know if those come to fruition, but, you know, if we're talking about that in July, like, you know, there's got to be some smoke where there's fire.
So Connor, that's obviously a very specific example, but to Michael's earlier question, do you think that big picture, like with season, like long props specifically leaning toward the under, that that's the same way you would lean in general as it pertains to win total season long unders?
I think that there's some truth there. If you go through all the different wins and you add them up, they usually add up to more than the total amount of possible wins in a season. So that lends to some thoughts of, like, there's probably a little bit of value on the unders. Now, that being said, there are each line is obviously volatile. Each team's not going to win directly, like, one win or half a win over their actual line. I tend to do play more unders because, again, like, if a quarterback gets injured, you're in a much, much better spot than the other way. That being said, I'm a little bit more hesitant to just play as many unders as I do with, like, season-long props per se instead of team specifically.
And you're a big Jet booster this year. You feel comfortable they'll stay healthy and win the East?
That's the biggest thing is health. I really like what they did with the offensive line. You know, they added a lot more depth there. Their defense remains one of the best in the league. They added some depth at receiver too with Mike Williams, who I think should get going midway through the season. Drafted Malachi Corley as well. I mean, they have a great running game as long as Breece Hall can stay healthy. That it is the question of health here. Like, if you look at them from just a pure roster standpoint and you can assume that they're going to be healthy the entire season, I think they're one of the best teams in the NFL. Now, again, that's a major issue of, like, if they're going to be healthy. So I think that their division prices and, you know, odds to maybe make the championship game could be interesting, like, from a long shot perspective. But obviously there is the major caveat of, like, Aaron Rodgers, a little bit older, coming off the Achilles injury. So I think if he stays healthy and he's at least competent, that the Jets are going to make a run here in the playoffs.
Connor, you'll like this, and you said the word a couple times in your answer. The big question is if with this team. We call them the ifers because I just don't know. And I totally drank the Kool-Aid last year that I hesitate to jump back in on the Jets this season because of the reasons you just laid out. Yes, they appear to be so freaking talented on paper, but there are offensive linemen that they brought in that have recent injury history. Aaron Rodgers is an aging quarterback coming off of a very serious surgery. Even a lot of the skill position talent has had significant injuries recently. Like, it freaks me out. It scares me a little bit to buy in on the Jets.
Yeah, and that's the toughest part. But I think that we have to look at the changes they made, because last year, even if Rodgers was healthy the whole season, their offensive line was terrible. I mean, they had one of the worst offensive lines in the league. And so it's one of those things where that got better. They added more receiving depth. It's not just Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers' buddies playing out there. You know, they have added a couple more guys on top of that. So I'm excited. I think that it should be an interesting season for the Jets.
And how about Buffalo? We know they traded Stephon Diggs. That moved the market in favor for Houston. They went from 8.5 wins up to 9.5. But Kenyon Coleman, who they trade up to get, they basically pick in the second round. You don't think he's going to come in and be able to gain over 700 yards?
No, I'm on the under here, and I think there's a couple of reasons. You know, I think that when he was drafted, everyone thought that he's just penciled in immediately, you know, as the X or, you know, as a receiver here, on the, like, starting receiver. But they signed Curtis Samuel. They retained Khalil Shakir. They signed MBS, I think, to play kind of that Gabe Davis field stretching role. They still have Dalton Kincaid, who's going to play a much bigger role here. And then once the Bills shifted to Joe Brady as their offensive coordinator, they went from a 5.1% pass rate over expectation to a negative 3.3% pass rate over expectation, ran the ball way more. And then Coleman is a prospect, 4.64 at the combine. Even though he's a bigger guy, I don't think it was all that impressive. And the Bills drafted him at 33, but they traded down twice in a range where people were taking a ton of wide receivers. They traded down from 27 to 32 to 33. And his scores at getting open against coverage, against man coverage, was in the 20th percentile in the last 10 years. So I'm not really sure that he's going to be an every down player right away. Early comments are basically saying that he's not quite ready. And then very ominous comments from Brandon Bean, as well as Joe Brady so far. So I think they're going to bring him along slowly. And it's going to be a tough end of the season stretch for Keon Coleman to kind of pick it up and get that 700 yards in the end of the season.
Another wide receiver under you're looking at, Jerry Jeudy, coming off his fourth year in Denver, had 758 yards last year. His prop this season at 725.5 in his first year with the Browns. Why do you think it's another under for him?
Yeah, there's another couple of reasons here. I think Deshaun Watson hasn't really played all that well. Last year, 26 of 49 quarterbacks in EPA and completion percentage over composite. And then the year prior, 40th out of 53. And beyond that, the Browns have been really run heavy generally in the games that he played. He only averaged 220 passing yards per game. And then if we look at Jeudy as a prospect, I mean, he was just traded for a fifth and sixth round pick after four relatively disappointing seasons. I think the upside when he was drafted was massive. He was a great route runner, but it just really hasn't all come together. And now you're having him with target competition like Amari Cooper, David Njoku. And so for me, we're looking at a guy who has, we have projected for 558 yards. I think he lives in that probably 500 to 600 range. So getting him above 700 feels like a pretty strong under here.
Of all the props you went through, of all of them all of them, what is your one where you say, this one can't miss?
Let's see here. I'm trying to think. So I like the two that we talked about earlier. One that I got on earlier was, and I still think is solid, is Xavier Leggett under. We got it at 700. I think there's still some 600s out there. I mean, he was drafted essentially as like a gadget guy for the Panthers. You know, they signed Deontay Johnson. They still have Adam Thielen. Bryce Young has not played all that well. There's still plenty of questions on the offensive line, even though they invested a lot in the offseason. I don't really think that he's, you know, really a starting caliber receiver right now, to be honest, and that they're going to use him a lot around the line of scrimmage, which doesn't really tend towards a lot of yards. Plenty of receptions, but not a ton of yards. So I think Xavier Leggett unders as well are really, really strong still.
My Panthers fan husband is probably crying watching the program now for that one, Connor. Thank you. And listen, yeah, we all, trust me, I didn't mean to put you in a court. We all know there's no such thing as a can't miss, but appreciate you sharing some of the bets that you really, really like going into this season. And of course, the trend, season-long unders, the way to go. You're awesome. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Connor Allen, 444 Football, doing a great job as an NFL betting analyst. Michael, any of those that you agree, disagree on? Anything stand out?
You know, just going through all my notes for the getting ready for the season, I think the Raiders are going to be in an uphill battle. And I do think the Davante Adams conversation needs to be had. He just saw Amari Cooper get his contract readjusted. Is he going to get his? Matthew Stafford wants to get his. I think that could cause some concern. And look, the Raiders, I mean, let's be clear. You know, they struggle to throw the football effectively against good teams. And can they do that this year? Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, I'm not sure of that.
Yeah, he liked the under and thought it was an interesting approach potentially for the fewest wins in the league this season. Okay, that's a wrap for hour one. When we come back, two star wide receivers want contracts. One is holding out. One is on site. Will a deal get done for either? Plus, what's on Michael's mind is all 32 teams have officially started training camp. We'll be right back.